Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. On today's episode, I'd like to invite back one of my friends, reintroducing Coach J-Ro, also known as Unsummoned Skull, back to the channel. Hey, J-Ro, how's it going today?
It's going all right. If a voice could blush, I'd be blushing right now.
All right. Great to hear. So the topic of today's episode is definitely something that we've been thinking about for a while now, since the COVID pandemic has been going for about a year now. And a lot of us have turned to what we've termed VEDH, so video EDH, as our preferred medium to be able to play card games with our friends. Now, again, while it sounds less than complicated, I mean, obviously you just need a camera, a computer, and something like Spelltable, or even just Google Hangouts, like my playgroup uses. Trying to find a playgroup, or conversely, trying to find people to fill your playgroup, is actually a very complicated topic that makes for a very interesting discussion. Again, this goes back to the roots of our format as kind of crowdsourced in the fact that Wizards of the Coast doesn't actually operate Commander. It's effectively made for the players by the players. And that brings up some very interesting dynamics that don't always mesh from person to person. Obviously, everyone has their own preferences. Everyone has their preferred ways to play, preferred power level, different kinds of decks, different strategies, etc., etc. And trying to find the right playgroup, or at least be able to fit in with your playgroup that you've found, or conversely, trying to cultivate a very welcoming and open community for all sorts of people with different strategies and different opinions on the game can be extremely difficult. So I'm going to start the conversation off here with, if you're just a player, a solitary player, and you find a Discord link, let's say on Twitter, some creator has posted a link to their Discord on Twitter to try to be able to get people in their community to be able to maybe play some pickup games. Maybe there's an LFG in there, something like that. There's a ton of these channels out there. J-Ro, I know you've been building one for the last couple of months that I'm part of where this happens a lot. But if you're just a random player, you just click on this link and you're looking to play some games, what things might you look at before you respond to an LFG post on one of these message boards?
Okay, so if I'm a newer player looking, I stumble onto one of the LFG Discord servers, and somebody posts that they're looking for a game. Well, first thing you'd want to make sure is that I have all of my tech ready, so they don't have to wait for me to get set and things like that. Now, some places will be more amenable to that than others, but at this point, given that we've been in this COVID situation for almost a year, most LFG servers are expecting people to be ready to go. So if you click on these, if you tell them you're in for the game, you click on the Spelltable link, it's less than a minute for you to get set up. Some places will be more patient with you than others. But first, make sure that you have all your tech set up, that you have your overhead camera set up in such a way that it can see your playmat, that people can read the cards that you have, that it's able to be stationary and solitary so that it doesn't get blurry or move, that you have audio set up and that you understand how they are doing audio. Some do it via Spelltable, some do it via Discord, and if you have Spelltable audio on and Discord audio on, it'll create a reverberation effect, even if you have headphones on. So first thing would be make sure you have your tech in order. So would you like me to continue with regards to gameplay?
Yeah, so I guess We're looking for just some tips and ideas on if you're a player trying to get into an LFG game, like we've already said. how are we able to have the Rule Zero conversation over the internet, given the fact that it's much harder to do this in some ways than in-person Magic is? And also, or I should rephrase this, how should you temper your expectations of a group of what are probably random strangers for you, especially the first time that you're on there, and knowing that they may have been in the community much longer than you have, there may be a certain set of expectations or house rules in that Discord, let's say, that maybe you're not fully aware of, and how do you try to wade through all this information when you're just starting out?
Well, prior to accepting the LFG invitation, I would look into the welcome area, as well as any other specific rules that they have. I would look at the pinned messages especially. So that's the pin in the center between the member list and the ability to mute the channel and notifications.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd click on the pinned messages and make sure that you're aware of what information they want to have available to prospective players. Usually, they will have rules set out that way. Sometimes they are less obvious about them, in which case, the only way to know might be to ask. Are there any expectations? What sorts of decks are you playing? What sorts of decks would you like me to play? I would usually go towards the idea or go towards the conversation of what kind of a game are you looking for? What kind of an experience are you looking for? Rather than what is your power level? I know power level is the common term. It's almost cliche at this point. To me, when I hear people say, what's your power level? That makes me think of like Dragon Ball Z. At a certain point, power level is just a meaningless term. You can have high-power games that are boring, and you can have low-power games that are exciting and have a lot of interaction. It almost reminds me of the Team Four Star, where they talk about, where they have the powered-down version of Broly going, "What's your power level?" At some point, that's kind of what it sounds like to me in terms of just being, like, general noise. So, the discussion that I have is usually, okay, what's fun to you? And that's how the Skull Symbol, which is my Discord community, mostly functions. We play what's fun. And if what's fun for somebody is to play a stacks deck, then you know what? They go through it once, show you that they can win it, and then if people scoop, and then we play another game. Maybe that's just what they need on a given day. Maybe that person's feeling powerless, and playing stacks makes them feel powerful for a little bit. It's a little bit of bullying the table, but for the most part, you let them play what they want to play, let them have fun, and then you say, you know what, this would be fun for me. Is it possible that we could play this type of a game?
Mm-hmm. And that definitely goes back into the Rule Zero conversations that I feel MTG Twitter's really been harping on the last couple of months here. Yeah, because you're right, the power level conversation has kind of reached the point where it's almost noise at this point. I remember when I was first starting to play Commander, how power level really confused me because I thought that there was some interesting numerical scale where like there is an exact way to define a deck. But how do you do that when there is no measure to put this, no yardstick to put your deck up against? And I typically found that the numbers that I was hearing from others were always all over the map. So I never really understood exactly how to deal with that sort of situation when I walked right in, especially as a newer player who's just getting into the format. I didn't know what any of the cards did. And power level was just like, well, I just have the stack of cards here. I don't know what power level it is. It's just it's a deck, I think. And yeah, you're right. It's something that we're having to try to reckon with now is trying to figure out exactly what people want to get out of this game. Again, I'm pretty sure what I want to get out of a game may be different sometimes than what you want out of a game, for instance. But other times, what we want could be exactly the same thing. I think ultimately we want to all have fun playing cards. We don't want to get stuck in a situation where we feel like we can't play. And again, this all goes back to that Rule Zero, because we don't want to be left salty and feeling annoyed that we had our time wasted on when we sit down at the table and we get our expectations. That's just the lingering interest about our format here. versus the other competitive formats where you're really just trying to race against the clock. And you know this much better than I do, but you're playing competitively because you're trying to win something. Versus mm-hmm. here where, you know, frankly, even if you win, you shuffle up and you play again. That's just the way our format is, and the hill that we're always going to die on here, ultimately. It's just how we get to that point that could be a contention. And as a new player coming into a Discord, it could be very difficult to really understand where people are coming from if they've been playing for a while with the same group. And it's the same way as just getting a play group together in person, whether it's your LGS or just trying to get through some friends and their associates, whatnot. And I feel like you end up with a lot of the same dynamics there, because on Discord, you may have those the welcome posts, as you mentioned, the rules for the community, where a lot of the expectations are outlined. But in the real world, we don't always have those expectations. I remember walking into my local game store, again, giving a plug out to Guardian Games here, is that I played some extremely frustrating games with people because they didn't outline what they were doing until, you know, they did that. And it's just, I don't want to play with someone who's playing a turn six combo deck when I'm just playing, you know, low-powered mono-green Stompy. It's just, it's not fun for me, and no one ever talked about it. Just, hey, there's four people playing, or three people playing, do you want in? Well, sure, I don't want to be left out. And so Discord has allowed us to really be able to hopefully overcome some of those hurdles, but it still can be a challenge for newer players and people who are new to certain Discord communities to try to be able to fit in when you're not, without those expectations. So yes, those expectations are everything in this day and age where we're still trying to figure out how this format works and what we're trying to get out of it.
And that's where coming into the game with a certain mentality comes in. I know we were going to talk about, this is a different topic, we're talking about the psychology of the game. But one of the things that made me a lot happier with Magic was, as you sort of brought up, I was a much more competitive player at one point. I have played on the Pro Tour, I played in Grand Prix, I was a PPTQ and PTQ grinder for a while, and I enjoyed it to an extent. when I was that competitive nature really began when I was in college. And I can shout out to a local game store around Central Michigan, which was the Hall of Heroes. It's an awesome place as well. Hit and miss, though, a little bit with some of the people there. So when I was in college, I would often wind up, especially after I moved into an apartment, really tight on money. And so I would play in Friday Night Magics. And I would have to do better than a certain amount to get more than $5 worth of prizes in order to be able to play the next week. I was that strapped for cash, I couldn't afford entrance into FNM. So for a while, the only way for me to be able to have any kind of a play group was for me to win. It was win or don't play. Which is a really rough way to go about it for a while. So that really sparked the competitive nature in me. I wanted to do better. I started watching the videos and the streams of the Pro Tour, and I dreamed of one day being on there myself. Eventually, I made it there, but basically making it there kind of made me realize, you know what, I really enjoyed the games up to that point a lot more than I did actually being on the Pro Tour. And it was enough just to say I was there. So the way I approach games just in general is I want to do something I've never seen before. I don't care if I win. I want to do something I've never seen before. And that way, I have found that I win a lot more than I used to, just by wanting to do things I've never seen before, because people wind up seeing things they've never seen before and they're not prepared for it. Or people are so intrigued as to what the crazy thing is that I'm trying to do that they're more likely to let me do it. This is another kind of funky way to approach it.
Yeah, but again, we're definitely in agreement here. I like doing rather silly things too, because people have never seen us doing, or have never seen that happen before. Again, I'm going to cite your Simic Burn deck again. You know, when you're first learning about magic, yeah, and people tell you, hey, red is the color of burn and direct damage, the last thing you expect are blue and green to do that sort of thing. So just trying to come up with interesting ways to beat people is definitely something that keeps both of us going when we build our decks. And it's also just one of those interesting dynamics of, it's just, you're able to have fun by trying something new. I personally challenge myself by trying to find commanders who no one really ever plays with, and I try to find a way to make them good in some form or fashion. And again, I'm going to cite my Kothafed Soul Hoarder deck here, which, again, I talk about on a semi-regular basis. I talked about an episode on jank decks. Yeah, so if listeners, if you're interested in going and listening to me ramble for a few minutes about my Kothafed deck, definitely check that out. Or also got cite on my episode with Commander Mechanic a couple weeks ago, or Chris the Commander Mechanic, excuse me, a couple weeks ago, also mentioned that deck in length as well. And it just, it's one of those things where I just enjoy building a deck that no one has ever seen the commander of before, because they're more curious about seeing how you're going to be able to get more out of technically less. And obviously the community has pushed these cards aside. They say they're no good as commanders, and I'm always looking to try to challenge that assumption. I want to leave the game showing people something they have never seen before, while also, you know, trying to maybe try to win a game in a different way than I did the last time. I don't build extremely linear decks. I always try to build in a failsafe or two, or three or four, depending on that. Again, they're not the best decks, but just having that freedom to do that gives me reason to keep building decks and to keep playing. And so you're right. I always try to go into a game trying to do that thing that I built the deck for, but knowing that that's probably not always going to happen. And it's going to depend on the play group to really see if that sort of thing's going to work.
So you mentioned doing things that people haven't seen before, and that's one of the reasons why I've found acceptance in different groups that I've gone into. Even ones where some people didn't know me, or they might have had their own group or community. The fact that I like to go in and do things that people haven't seen before, it's one of the things that sort of endears me to different groups of people and shows that I'm bringing something that's different from whatever dynamic they already had. And that's just, in general, a good thing to do if you're going into a group of people where you don't know a lot and you're kind of uncomfortable. I will say, in person, I'm kind of shy. I have trouble approaching people at least a little bit. So when I'm in like large groups or halls or stuff like that. And so one of the things to do is to try to find or do something that is valuable to the people who are there, and that brings something that is different from whatever dynamic they already had. Sometimes you just want to blend in, especially if it's a particularly intense group or situation. And sometimes you want to show them that there's a reason why you're there, and there's a reason why they want you to be there. That's also something that I've learned from having a bunch of different jobs, working a bunch of different places, and that's part of the nature of being a teacher, and I am a teacher, by the way. A part of the nature of being a teacher is that I have to constantly reinvent myself and explain to different groups of people who I am. And when I can explain who I am, and it's somebody that, and that's an interviewing strategy too, to not only say who you are, but to say what you bring that's different from whatever it is they already have, that's a real good way to get a job, to really nurture any relationship. As my mom likes to say, it's the value added.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that honestly can be its own conversation, is how to be able to get into a play group, especially with people you don't know. And it's definitely something I think that all of us who struggle with these sorts of social situations at times need to really think about. So hopefully when we can return to some semblance of normalcy, we'll be able to go up to a play group and be able to find people to play with and hopefully be able to have a lot of fun doing that after such a long time away. Anyways, so I wanted to flip things to the other side of the coin here. Obviously, you've created quite a vibrant community with the skull symbol. I mean, I know I'm on there. Peter Monowhiteboarder, who's also been guesting on this podcast recently, is also on there. And we've just got a ton of other awesome people who are there. You're streaming a lot, Oathbreaker and Commander. And I was just curious, could you tell the listeners a little bit of your process about how you started the Skull Symbol Discord, and what are some of the things you've seen after trying to curate the community that you would like to see?
Honestly, it was a little bit of an accident. So the origins of the Skull Symbol go back a ways. The Skull Symbol itself has only been around for a few weeks, but it has a relatively large membership. So there are currently 36 online, 38 offline, so there's about 75 people in there. It's just a pretty big grouping, considering it didn't exist a little while ago. So in terms of tracing the origins, it starts with June of last year. So COVID stuff has been going on for a little bit, and they're doing Wizards of the Coast and Channel Fireball decided that they were going to do an online Command Fest.
Okay, yeah, I do remember that. That was the first one, right?
Yes.
Yep, I participated in like two or three games in that, so yeah, I do remember.
I was one of the featured matches. So I was in a game with Shivam and Sheldon, and honestly, it was amazing.
Oh, wow, that sounds amazing. I'm so jealous.
I didn't even have a setup. I made the setup for that.
Nice.
And I made a short deck tech video of one of my decks. This is before I even created the Unsummon persona. And so that was my Night at the Living Museum deck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with the hidden enchantments, like hidden gibbons and such, hidden gorillas.
No. Enlighten us.
So they're in green, blue, white, and there were some also in black, and I'm not sure in... So, green, blue, white. There's some in black. I'm not sure if red had any. But there were enchantments that became creatures in the Urza's Saga if certain conditions were met.
Uh-huh.
Those were called hidden creatures.
Oh, so something like Haunted Plate Mail later?
Kind of. This Haunted Plate Mail is a triggered ability. Sorry, it's an activated ability. These were triggered abilities. Okay. If an opponent plays a creature, this is what happens.
Gotcha.
So, that deck had no creatures in it besides the general, which was Tuvasa. And then it had a hidden commander, which was a Planeswalker. That's one of my... my all-time favorite Planeswalkers, and I have her an Oathbreaker general as well. It was Tamiyo Field Researcher. So Tamiyo Field Researcher was the docent leading people through the museum, and then Tuvasa was the owner of the museum.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially the theme of the deck. And it functioned exactly as you would think it would, because the opponents would be running into the exhibits of the museum, and I wasn't actually doing anything to them. They were doing it to themselves.
Interesting.
It really felt like they were experiencing the living museum. And that was one of the really cool original decks that I built. So that wound up getting featured in that match with Shivam, with Sheldon, and it wound up winning. I believe I was the only challenger to win and also the only challenger to not have technical difficulties. Somehow. Even though I was on one of my mom's computers, using... I have a wire rack on my desk with two cardboard boxes filled with books, a selfie stick duct taped to the top. Somehow that worked.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have my long cord yet, so I used my phone in the selfie stick. I didn't have the long cord yet, so it barely finished before the battery ran out. But that match really gave me the confidence that I needed to make my own channel. So I resolved that I was going to make my own channel, and I was going to become an affiliate by the end of the calendar year. And I'm not always great at holding myself to these things, so I also added a little caveat. I would stream every night at the same time, Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m., same school night, same school channel. And I did for a while, until I became affiliate, and I did that about 7 or 8 days before the end of the calendar year. And that happened also because I started reaching out to different groups and communities. When I found out that people were in different projects, like I found out there was the Ravnica Guild Challenge that was created by Paul Kinter. I joined that group when he wanted to get people into Oathbreaker and made an Oathbreaker charity for right after the end of the calendar year. I joined that group. I just kept joining more and more Discord groups and Discord servers and finding different ways to pick up games. It started with Play EDH as a way for me to try to regularly get games, and even then it was a little bit hit and miss as to whether I could get a game on time. Sometimes I would play Arena instead. I began, instead of doing like exclusively Commander and Oathbreaker, I did two games of Commander on Play EDH and two Arena nights. And I just didn't really have that much fun in Arena because it felt impersonal, and it felt like it was work as opposed to fun. I think that's one of the things that happens when you're still trying to gain a following, is if they're not active on your Twitch, it just feels like you're alone playing a game. And I didn't have the competitive itch anymore because I'd already made the Pro Tour, so I wasn't sure who I was supposed to be competing with. So, as I gained popularity and support, I sort of did away with, Arena. Play EDH was hit and miss. I will say Play EDH is a great way to meet people. It's a great way to get in games quickly if you're just looking for pickup games. And there are some people who are on the Skull Symbol because of Play EDH and not because of any other servers that we were on. So I do not in any way disparage Play EDH, even though some people, even though I had some negative experiences on there too. I would never think to disparage them because they're one of the reasons why I am where I am and why I have the following that I have. So I would join in different groups. I would find people who were trying to do cool looking projects, and then I would join those groups, and they would help me to. So it was sort of a two-way street where they would get their project working, and I would get regular people watching my stream and be able to have my streams regularly fire. So that was a way for me to get started, for them to get what they wanted, and for me to start doing my own community building. as these projects started to peter out, in some cases, or as they not necessarily even ran their course, but as I started finding groups of people that I enjoyed continuing to collaborate with and have games with, I decided that I was going to take a chance. And this took a couple weeks once I had the idea. So first, I started putting the skull symbol, or I made a skull symbol. I made the image on, I think it was like Paint or something. It looks comical, but it worked. And I would just put that out in a general tweet and see if anybody responded to it. Sometimes it would get hits and sometimes it wouldn't. And there were a couple of times where I would have to go back to Arena because I couldn't get a stream to fire. And that was where the imposter syndrome starts to set in. Where I started to wonder if I am actually somebody people like to play with. Started to wonder if I actually had that much of a following. Some of the numbers on my streams were going down, and there was even the time when there was a strange interaction between Twitch and Discord, where the Discord kept my stream alive without any viewers, even after I had closed Streamlabs. And so I was trying to get to a certain average number of viewers to make the next level or to make affiliate. And I thought the dream was almost dead at that point because it was 3 hours of dead air. But kept going, kept adding more people, kept adding more Discords, and kept creating this these frequent collaborators. So some of those frequent collaborators would be, Zynum's been a frequent collaborator for quite a while, and he's an awesome guy, and I'm glad to have him there. He likes to say he's my Huckleberry.
Oh, yeah, I've definitely seen that that gif in the Discord, but yeah, Zynum's great.
Mm-hmm. yeah, Zynum's been there for a while, and he's had a couple projects that I've been part of, and so I started merging over, So the process of creating the skull symbol started with me putting out the skull symbol on Twitter, realizing that it was still kind of hit or miss, but there were certain people who kept responding. going through my existing Discords and adding people as friends. I just sneezed there. So adding people as friends, finding people that were on Twitter responding to the skull and asking if they had a Discord, and then I was a little nervous about creating the symbol itself because creating and maintaining a community requires a certain degree of vigilance to make sure that people aren't posting certain NSFW things, to make sure that the communication that's going on there is respectful and is avoiding certain denigrating terms and certain topics of conversation. So I was a little nervous because the things that go on a Discord server don't just reflect on the person who posted. They reflect on the administrators too, because they allow it. or disallow it. And they wind up being put in really tough positions because either they allow certain topics and it becomes public that they allow it and people might jump ship on the Discord, or they have to cut ties with certain people, which is difficult to do as well because you don't want to have to do that. So you have to be careful when you're creating a community, who it is that you're allowing into the community, how closely it is that you wish to monitor the community, and if you can't monitor it closely, make sure that you have mods who can. because you don't want things like that slipping through. So I'm a teacher. I have a number of other jobs as well. I'm a teacher, I'm a tutor, I'm a college professor. And so if I happen to be busy and don't check the Discord for a certain period of time and something goes through and it's not good, I have to respond to it quickly, or somebody has to be able to respond to it quickly. So I have a couple of mods on there. I haven't seen them really need to get involved in anything because the community that I created has been so awesome. That was, again, it being a happy accident, as Bob Ross likes to say. But that was something that made me a little anxious about starting the skull symbols. Okay, who's in the community? How do they relate to each other? How do I make sure that they're being respectful to each other and responsible? What happens if I'm unable to deal with it? So one of the things in terms of operating a Discord that I sort of learned the hard way, even though it wasn't me doing anything in particular, is if you put the join link to the Discord in a general tweet, you can get people joining the Discord that you might not want to have join the Discord, just because they come across the tweet and not because you actually invited them. So there was a time during a stream when somebody posted something that was NSFW and quite offensive in the LFG server on the skull symbol. And during the stream, I had to ban the person and delete the message. But that was the sort of thing that I was scared of when I decided I was going to create the skull symbol, was, okay, what happens if I'm in a position where I can't moderate and something bad happens like that? So in addition to the symbol itself being active, I have tried to be really active on there.
Yeah, and those are the things that are even above and beyond just trying to worry about, hey, can I get a bunch of people on my Discord to just play some games with? You really have to think about all of the administrative tasks and then just, you know, try to figure out how to curate your community. I think that's the biggest challenge, especially the thing that's stopping me from trying to grow my Discord. I do have a Discord. That's obviously how I'm running the audio through here, but that's mostly just for a few personal friends that I know from the game store who I've given the link to, Ryan, for instance, who I've known for a long time, and again, just other podcast guests who I brought on here over the last few weeks and months. And it seems to me, just from an outsider, J-Ro, that you've done a really great job curating that community, because all the expectations in the skull symbol are clearly stated at the very beginning of the project. I've pretty much been on your Discord since it started, like maybe the day after it started, I think. And I mean, besides that one slip up that you mentioned where something got through the cracks there, which I didn't see because I wasn't logged on at the time. But other than that, it's just I've really not seen any issues on the Discord server. You've done a great job, so kudos to you for making it all work out. And, mm-hmm. and taking the time to curate such a good good community. But then you also do have to consider, it's like, how do we turn this community into a really good gaming community where everyone can get the games in that they want to and have a lot of fun? I mean, that's obviously the challenge that all of us, when we've started Discord, have wanted to be able to get to, is like, how do we grow our community? How do we grow our brand? And I can see that just being a real challenge. Is how, yeah, let the listeners know how you've tried to approach the power, you know, I know we've said power level is not quite the right term, but how have you approached the issue of trying to grow a community and trying to balance out people's opinions on what they consider to be the most fun way to play the format?
Okay. So the general rule on the skull symbol is play with fun. And what's fun is different from person to person, sometimes even from game to game. So one of the examples I'll use, and hopefully he's okay with it, if not, I'll talk with him about it. Mario Casales. So Mario Casales is really awesome. He's a Magic player who I believe, if I recall correctly, is from Mexico. or that at least he's based out of there for now. And he's actually, he was just looking for a game at like 1:30 today, so he's still active on there. And in the Lexicon, which is another awesome community, that's one where I talked to the people from the Lexicon about creating my server before I made it, because I knew there were going to be some people who would go from one to another. But the agreement that we made was that the two are not mutually exclusive, and they will have people looking on mine, I'll have people looking on theirs, and having more LFG servers is never actually a bad thing. But Mario Casales, he likes to play infinite combos, he likes to play cards that are, if I was going to go at a monetary level, or at a synergistic level, are probably a little bit above what I would play for myself. So, for example, and I'm not necessarily saying he's played this specific card before, but he might play a Demonic Tutor. I personally do not own Demonic Tutor. I actually think I have one. Sorry. Yeah, I just recently got one. So, he might play Demonic Tutor to find a combo piece, and that's not necessarily something that I would choose to do. But if you're going, but I will say, my crazy jank brews have beaten them more often than not. Because no matter how crazy or powerful your deck may be, there's still three other people at the table. And if we know that a player happens to enjoy going infinite, like I believe he has a Kiki-Jiki deck, he has a deck that, a red cap deck that can go infinite damage that way. If we know that somebody likes to do things like that, then we know to disrupt that person while still executing whatever our game plan is. So one of the things that I think he enjoys about playing me is that even though I don't necessarily play at the same intensity level, I guess I would say, rather than power level, my decks are always going to be interactive. That's part of what I feel it means to be the Unsummoned Skull. Whatever he's doing, I'm going to be able to mess with it in some way. And that's part of the challenge for him, is how does he get around me messing with him? So, power level is a tough thing to evaluate. And fun is a lot easier to evaluate. You could also ask, how are you looking to win the game? Are you looking to win through combat? Are you looking to win through some big splashy spell? Are you looking to win through infinite combos? Are you looking to win by establishing some sort of a lock and then slowly grinding the game out? Different people look for different things. You can have an example of a relatively low power deck that was still very powerful and modern would be like Lantern Control. They're playing Lantern of Insight. How powerful is that card, right? But that deck won a Pro Tour. So the power level of the individual cards is not necessarily a great indicator of just how strong the deck is. I would say when I'm thinking of play what's fun, there's a difference to me between somebody who's looking to Demonic Tutor for Rhystic Study, or Demonic Tutor for a counterspell, or for a combo piece.
Board
or
white, somebody's looking, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Or somebody who's looking to Demonic Tutor into Tree of Perdition. To me, when I think of play what's fun, what's fun to me would be Demonic Tutor into Tree of Perdition, because I want to win with Tree of Perdition and Triskaidekaphobia and see if I can pull that off, because that would be awesome.
Yeah, I've definitely run into someone who tried to work with the Triskaidekaphobia. It didn't quite work, but it was interesting, I recall, to see how that whole thing worked out, because his deck was not overly optimized to make it work. So it was just kind of an interesting way to see, can he get us down here? We have like a 5-turn clock, but we're not overly worried about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe a different topic for a different day, but is power level the same thing as optimization? Because my decks are optimized. They do their jobs very well. Even if it seems like they're struggling for a little bit, they do their jobs well. And one of the lessons that was sort of taught to a new person to the Skull Symbol yesterday was, if you have the chance to take me out, you take me out. I believe I ran my Uyo... I ran my Uyo Chaos deck. And what was the game end? The game ending combination that I wound up having was Niblis of Frost and Rite of Replication. So basically any spell was tapping down every creature, and I had exponentially large 3/3s flyers. I did that at 2 life. After barely getting over 4 mana for the first 10 turns. I was really not much of a factor besides drawing the occasional card and removing the occasional creature. Several times of which was Mawu. But I believe that the people at the table had a good time, and that Chaos deck still did its job, even though it was short on land for a long time. So my decks are still optimized, even if the traditional power level is low. Like, you wouldn't think of Supplant Form as a powerful card, but to me, it's hilarious.
And yeah, I mean, I definitely fall under the category of demonic tutoring for whatever is useful, but I mean, I do have a copy of Demonic Tutor, and the silly thing about it is that it's in my actually cheapest deck otherwise. I have a extremely cheap Voltron deck where almost all the cards are 25 cents or less, and nice. I just have Demonic Tutor in there because no one expects it, honestly.
Easy deck to turn into bubblegum.
Yeah, I mean, I could easily turn that into bubblegum. And again, for listeners, that's a 25-cent cap, price cap on all cards in a 100-card deck, including your commander. So it's another interesting way of being able to play the game using super cheap cards. But it just I utilized Demonic Tutor the last time I played on that deck on a Magic with Zuby stream. So if the listeners are interested in seeing that one, definitely check his stuff out and search for the one with, honestly, the most... Actually, not the most views, but yeah, I used it to great effect, and I got some very interesting comments from some of the other players on there for tutoring for like a 15-cent card. So it's just things like that that are just silly and fun. But again, that deck works very well in its own right. Just because a card is 15 to 25 cents doesn't mean it's not powerful. So again, yeah, the whole thing of optimization, the whole thing of card selection, that is a completely different conversation. But yeah, trying to do fun things and find people who want to have that fun with you really is the major challenge of all of us trying to play VEDH these days. And we both have played enough games online that we've had times where we've had a lot of fun and times where we haven't exactly had a lot of fun, because again, the power level conversation, as messed up as it can be, as well as different expectations. Different people just bring a deck, they're playing a deck, and you have absolutely no idea what's in it besides their commander. So I've had good experiences, especially on your channel, and I've had some pretty bad experiences too when those expectations haven't been made clear. You're just playing, and again, those are, I feel, are the times that where we as Magic players should be trying to figure out exactly how we want to play, especially when we do start returning to play in person again. And hopefully we've learned a few things about power levels. Not going to really work. What are you trying to do with your deck? What is your deck trying to do? Do you play combos? Do you not play combos? You know, just trying to figure out how to best describe our deck when, again, this is a very crowdsourced format. There really is no best way to do this. How do we try to make sure that we can get play groups to work on both sides as the single player, as well as the play group, established play group trying to find a fourth player? Like my established play group when we added Ryan a couple months ago so we could have a fourth person finally, just try to make sure that we're able to have good games without anyone feeling too salty about things.
There are also some things like when you are running, so as a person who's running the server, one of the things I did like last night, even though I do like to do my grading and I try not to stay up, well, I don't sleep, but I do try to make it so that I'm a good host. So we had the game that we usually had, the time we usually had it, but there was somebody else who said that they couldn't make it until later, and so I did another game after it, even though I was kind of tired, but did another game after it so that he didn't feel left out. Also, so that because it's fun. And I didn't want to do my work because my work is work. But that's one of the nice things to do when you are, or when you have the ability to, and when you are somebody who is part of that group, to try to make sure that you are reaching out to people. And that you are being sensitive to them, and that you're also showing that you're treating them in a kind, respectful way, and that you value them. That's something that I've been working on as well, in terms of making sure that the people who are important to me know that they're valued. Sometimes it's talking people up, sometimes it's retweeting their tweet, sometimes it's just commenting on things or liking their things. Sometimes it's sending out a Discord message because you haven't heard from them in a while. But that's one of the ways to help create a community, is to show that you care for people and to reach out to them and make sure that you know that they know how you feel, you know how they feel. You could say that's part of generally being a good person, but that's part of growing any kind of a community.
Yeah, this has been a very interesting conversation, just trying to go through and build a community by being active in other communities. Again, none of this stuff happens in a vacuum. All of us these days are speaking with each other on Twitter. We're in the same Discords. We find the people who we tend to play with more. And then obviously, we're only playing with a small portion of the community, especially on the larger servers. And we start trying to take that and develop our lists of contacts of people who we do try to play again more often because we do have a positive interaction with them. So yeah, it's been very interesting to hear how you were able to build your Discord server and how it really wasn't meant to be, honestly, but you've been able to make it something based on your persistence as well as being able to find the good parts of Discord and being able to make that work for you. I think that right there is something that a lot of people who are trying to build their own Discords or trying to find new places to play on different Discords really need to keep in mind, is that obviously each community is different. Each community is going to have its own set of expectations, own set of rules, and the people on there are probably going to differ in how they like to play the game. So that's why it's good to have a healthy community, obviously, because you want to make sure that you have a wide variety of those people on your server so that anyone can pick up a game at any time with any other players. And I think that right here, right there is really the manifestation of what we're trying to get to when we can eventually go back to play in person, is how can we try to be better players and how can we try to be better pods, especially in our format, where we have to worry about that group dynamic. How can we be better trying to invite people into our existing play groups if we need another person without scaring them away? Again, that's gonna be something that we could be reckoning with for years, but at least we've started the conversation, and I think that's the important bit.
And trying to find the parts of yourself, because in COVID times, there are parts of yourself that you don't necessarily get to access the way you did before. And you're often the COVID depression comes from realizing that there's part of you that's missing. For example, as a teacher with the job that I have right now, it's more of like I grade papers and I don't really get to have as many interactions with students as I usually do. I don't get to have my games club anymore, so the Skull Symbol's kind of like my games club. But I also would work with students who are from sort of an impoverished area, and so that was the part of me that made me feel like I was making a positive difference in the world. And the Skull Symbol does some of that, but a big part of that came from through Oathbreaker at the beginning of this calendar year, doing the the charity stream, where I took on 5 hours of Oathbreaker over 2 days,
mm-hmm.
And seeing people put out seeing people post that they're looking for donations to certain charities, seeing Wizards do the Black Women Code promotions, seeing the playmat for the playmat with Teferi's protection, just awesome ways of doing good with gaming, and that's something I'd like to do a little bit more of as well, because that makes that's the part where this isn't just a game for some people, and this can be more than a game and more than a community. Can be sort of therapeutic right now. Help people find the parts of themselves that aren't necessarily easily expressed with people's lives changing and being forced to change with the crazy chaotic times. I very much enjoyed creating innovative lesson plans, and I can't really do that. And so one of the things I do instead of creating innovative lesson plans is create innovative decks for people to experience and enjoy. I've created a community where otherwise I would usually have my games club, which is its own community. But I don't have that access anymore, and so I'm trying to figure out how do I take the parts of me that I like and find a way to express them. And that's one of the things that the Skull Symbol's done. It's taken parts of me that I like and found a way to use them to bring people together.
And we're very grateful for you having done so, because I think that that's mm-hmm. opened up a lot of doors for a lot of people who were just, but especially like myself, who we just never quite found a good home on Discord, and now we actually have a very good server to go to when we're trying to find games to play and people to play with. So thank you for taking the time and being so vigilant about getting your Discord up and running and then keeping it running so smoothly.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Yeah, no problem.
So we're always looking to add people.
Yep, so definitely, if you, the listener, are interested in joining J-Ro's Skull Symbol Discord channel, where can they find it?
Okay, so it is called the Skull Symbol. It's a Discord channel. In terms of getting an invitation to the Skull Symbol, if you know me on Discord, that's Coach J Row number 1292. You can send me a direct message that way, or you can send me a direct message at Coach_J_RO, which is my Twitter handle.
All right, sounds good. And you said you stream 4 nights a week, correct? On Twitch?
Yep, 4 nights a week on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/unsummonskull.
All right, and currently we are going through mono-colored Mondays. I know that this upcoming Monday is mono-blue, correct?
Yep, you get to see the Uyo deck back in action.
Yep, and I'm going to be on there, too. I'm going to be piloting my Rain Academy Chancellor deck. So talking about kind of a random pairing of commanders there, there you go.
Yep.
All right. So again, J-Ro, it's been a pleasure as always. Thanks for being on the podcast with me today.
Absolutely. It's an honor. Sorry if I rambled a little bit.
That's okay. I mean, it. People really needed to know that making a Discord is not just, hey, I want to create a Discord, click create, and it's going to just populate itself. It's mm-hmm. going to take a lot of time, a lot of effort, just like any venture of this type, to be able to grow it in the way that you want to see it. You could have just left a link out, and you get a lot of potentially problems on your Discord, and the fact that you've been able to be vigilant and be active on your community while still playing and having time to play and making time to play, I think that right there is the real key on how to make a healthy community on Discord in these days.
Hey, go outside of your comfort zone. You make sure that everybody in the community feels valued.
Yep. So that's going to be our lingering bit here for the rest of the day, something that I hope that the listeners have really enjoyed listening about, and something that hopefully will stick with them going forward into the VEDH community. You've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. For J-Row, for Ryan, and myself, have a great rest of your day.